what's religious about Satanism?
Well, I think most people mistake the word spiritual for religious as being equals. Philosophy is generally something that explains existence but without the use of symbolism and ritual in order to enhance producing an understanding of that perspective. Now, Satanism understands that we're creatures of conceptual consciousness and that our concepts are built together and to make ultimately symbols which can allow us to hold many concepts in conscious focus at one time. It's a very powerful thing. Now, that's something that we feel is a natural part of human existence, and it leads to rituals as a form of human behavior. So we employ that as a very potent way for self-transformational psychodrama and catharsis, and makes us feel better.
Mm-hmm. And you say that the ritual element there is what makes it religious.
Absolutely, yes. Hmm. There's no belief or spirituality in Satanism. We're carnal, we're skeptical, we are proudly faithless people.
Hmm. And yet, if we look at the Latin, the etymology of the word religion, it has a sense of binding together, religio, to bind together. And that suggests a community of sorts, and yet you're quite clear that there is really no such thing as a satanic community as such.
Well, we're in an interesting third side position always, so you can't always expect us to follow the either or of the normal kind of world. That's why we're a church of Satan. It's kind of a radical thing to do that. And essentially, what we do is we hold ideas in common. That's what we are bound together with. As I like to describe us, we're a meta-tribe of people who have a natural outlook that seems to come basically from birth. And that's what unites us, this common philosophy, not coming together and trying to act like some kind of community, having meetings or prayer sessions. We have something much deeper that's what unites Satanists.
You're not theistic Satanists. So what does Satan represent for you and for the Church of Satan?
Well, first of all, I reject the term theistic Satanist. Since Satan means adversary and opposer in Hebrew, Satanism as a philosophy was defined by Anton LaVey as an atheistic one. So we feel that those people who believe in the devil, they're devil worshippers or demonolaters. They're not Satanists. Now, what we invoke in Satan is a projection of the best in ourselves, a symbol of pride, liberty, and individualism.
Let's talk a little bit about the Temple of Set then, because in 1975, a group of disaffected Church of Satan members left the church and founded the Temple of Set. And they're a somewhat mysterious organization. They wouldn't put anyone forward to be interviewed for this program. But from what I've read, they claim the mantle of a sort of authentic Satanism, in that they acknowledge the existence of a metaphysical being or power. Now, are you saying they're following a completely different path to that of the Church of Satan, or are there some convergences?
Oh, there are no convergences. The Setians are spiritual mystics, and we're carnal realists. In fact, they don't consider themselves Satanists. They call themselves Setians because they really do believe that Set exists. And if you read their literature, they also believe that another Egyptian deity, Harwer, exists and was sort of contending with Set. And they also think that through reincarnation, each Setian can possibly also become a god. So in fact, they're some kind of neo-pagans. Satanists are a subset of the atheist philosophy, and there's absolutely no congruence whatsoever.
But where you say that Satanism is a form of self-worship or self-deification, it's interesting to me that the original grounds for dissent among the Setians when they broke away from the Church of Satan was the larger-than-life presence of the personality of Anton LaVey, and there seemed to be some criticisms that really the Church of Satan was becoming a vehicle for his personality and for the personalities of some of the other dominant members. Is that a danger in a group like, in an organization like the Church of Satan, where self-deification is celebrated? Well, what do you do with the role of ego? Does that get out of control and cause trouble?
Well, let me go back a little. The Setians actually didn't claim that. What the Setians claimed when they broke free of the Church of Satan was that they were really in touch with an existing deity. They felt some kind of communication when in ritual with an actual deity. They really didn't care about Anton LaVey and his personality, because actually one of the highest officials in the Church of Satan, Michael Aquino, he was, you know, if you're talking about egos and people with that, he was certainly somebody with a very full ego at the time and loved to get publicity and have his name out there. So he, you know, in fact, you could see, you know, the Temple of Set wasn't trying to put that kind of aspect aside. But essentially, they felt really that they were in communication with a mystical, transcendent being, which Anton LaVey did not feel was part of Satanism at all from the start. And even his responses to the letters that they wrote clarified that at the time. And those are available online. You can find them if you're interested in the details. But the whole idea of celebrating ego, we are very realistic people, we Satanists. And we understand that since we consider ourselves self-deifiers, we understand that nature is hierarchical and that in any kind of pantheon of deities, that there's always going to be different levels of people as their own deities. So, we're aware of our talents and abilities and we try to judge them with accuracy and without trying to create some kind of false image of ourselves as being somehow – we're not megalomaniacs, let me say. That might be just the easiest way of getting to it, that we're actually very rational people and we can be our own gods and we can also be beneficent gods. So we can deal with the other people around us in a very charitable and loving way. It's not all about crushing other people, which seems to be what folks tend to misinterpret self-centeredness as being.
And yet we have philosophy, or I guess you wouldn't call it a philosophy, but you'll be familiar with the Buddhist teaching, and not just in Buddhism either, but this idea that ego is in some sense a veil of illusion. It's something that gets in the way of seeing the world as it is, and that, you know, the self is a kind of a specter, doesn't really exist in some sense, or it clouds our perception. Does that fit into satanic philosophy at all?
No, we reject that idea utterly. We think that you can totally – the self is what is conscious. It is you that is perceiving existence. So yourself is necessary to even perceive existence at all. If you want to understand existence, you have to have a sense of self. But you don't put yourself as the arbiter of what is real. We try to look to science as a means of explaining what is out there in the objective universe and try to learn as much as possible. We understand that because human senses are fallible, that we're always going to have a subjective perception of existence, but that doesn't prevent us from trying as much as possible to gain a more objective perspective on what's out there.
When you say that the Satanist devotes his or her life to self-fulfillment and carnal indulgence, survival of the fittest, a sort of social Darwinist view of the world, to me, that sounds a lot like mainstream society. And I want to ask, what's the difference between the sort of hedonism and rational self-interest that we see all around us every day and the hedonism and rational self-interest of a Satanist?
Well, the Satanist is not a hedonist. We are actually Epicureans, because hedonism implies that you have no control over your seeking of satisfaction. One of the main dictums of the Satanic Bible is indulgence, not compulsion. So we reject hedonism as being something that's uncontrolled. We're very controlled, we Satanists. And so our rational self-interest and Epicureanism can be seen as being different from those aspects of society that you would find as being hedonistic and self-seeking. But essentially, too, Satanism is trying to deal with the human animal as it really is. We're not idealists. We're not trying to change humans into something other than what they are. And so we see in our species a natural seeking for pleasure. We just try to find a way of codifying it into something that can work in a social order.
So it's not a kind of you're not saying that there's a special kind of Epicureanism to do with Satanism that sets you apart from the mainstream. In some sense, you're right in there.
Well, I would say we were there before that was going on, so we set the tone for that.
What about this idea of the natural order, though, the natural hierarchy, according to which Christian morality is somehow unnatural? But I'd put it to you that the existence of Christianity and the success of Christianity over 2,000 years, wouldn't that indicate that it does have a place in nature, and that in denying the naturalness of altruism and other Christian virtues, you're selling human nature a little short and not paying full credit to the varieties of human experience?
Well, actually, I think they're the ones who aren't giving full credit to the varieties of human experience. We perfectly think that it's fine if you want to choose to be altruistic and charitable, if you want to sacrifice yourself. Those are complete options that are available to the Satanist. The problem with the Christians is that they want to force you to do those things to the exclusion of all else. That's the unnaturalness of that position. Now, it's been wonderfully successful because Christianity is this great confidence scheme. They tell people that, life is terrible, and the only time that life is going to be wonderful is in the afterlife. As Monty Python said, you get your afterlife mints. Now, by telling people who are generally miserable, as people have been through most of the 2,000 years of Christian history, that don't pay attention to how rotten your life is or to the fact that we who are running the church have wonderful jewels and palaces and robes, you just toil along, give your alms to the church, obey us, and that when you're dead, it'll be wonderful and you'll be in heaven. That's a great recipe for success. It's a wonderful way of running a tyranny, and it's been successful for 2,000 years. But I think we're at a point in history where I think people pulled their level of living up so that they don't have to be subject to that, and that secularism can be successful. We don't have to look for a better afterlife. We can enjoy this life, and it's time for that to be relegated to a dustbin.
Hmm. I wonder, though, if there are certain elements within Christianity that are already relegating that kind of thinking to the dustbin. I mean, do you think that you might be putting up an idea of Christianity there, which it does exist, but it's a very narrow fundamentalist style of Christianity, which in many ways has been superseded? I mean, there are a lot of aspects of Christian thought and theology today which do pay full respect to secular values and a lot of the sorts of things you're talking about. It's not just, you know, when you die you go to heaven and that's what it's all about. Do you think, you may be selling Christianity a little short there?
Oh, I'm not actually at all. The progressive elements in Christianity are a minor part of them. In fact, the fundamentalist aspects are the ones that are growing at a rapid pace in their whole worldwide denominations. That's what's on fire now. Not the rational folks, not the ones who are embracing secularism. Bishop Shelby Spong, he's a fellow who actually said Christianity must change or die. It has to become more secular. It has to lose those foolish medieval ideas. But he's in the minority amongst Christians. So again, I would applaud people like him. They ought to change that religion. And I do hope that those kind of rational perspectives predominate in time, but I don't see them as doing so now.
Hmm. But if they did, you would have to rethink this very sharp sort of dualism that seems to operate between Satanism and Christianity.
We always have to rethink anything. Satanism is completely evolutionary philosophy. We look at the world around us and how it alters and grows, and Satanism is ultimately utterly adaptable.
What about the way in which Satanism sets itself apart from the herd? There's a lot of Anton LaVey in the Satanic Bible. He talks about the herd a lot. And I wonder if, you know, there's a perspective from which you could say life can really only be pleasurable at all because somebody's out there stacking the supermarket shelves and enforcing the law and keeping all those sort of mundane wheels turning, and that if everybody lived like a Satanist, we'd have a rather hellish life on Earth. It really would be survival of the fittest at its most brutal. What's your response to that?
Well, Satanism is basically an approach that asks for a society, a culture. We understand that humans are social creatures. Therefore, we need a social contract. We want equitable laws and rules for interaction. Jurisprudence, the whole tort system, is certainly something we consider utterly satanic because it's out there to help people find equitable ways of dealing with each other. And in order to have a culture where you can enjoy things to the maximum, we need civilization. In a country, we would have police forces to help keep criminal activity down. And in Satanism, our whole philosophy of justice is the Roman lex talionis, let the punishment fit in kind and degree the crime. I think criminals would actually probably be less active in a satanic society because we'd have a very potent police force. And of course, we'd also advocate having a very powerful and technologically advanced military force to protect our free nation from other nations that might be more tyrannical or fascistic and would want to conquer us.
So to what extent do you see the United States today as a satanic society? Well, what you've just described there sounds like a sort of vaguely Republican-leaning conception of what a defense force should be and how a society should operate.
Well, Anton LaVey himself said Satanism at its heart is Americanism. So you get it right from the source that he definitely felt that the American society was completely congruent with Satanism because it promoted the idea of individuals finding the best in themselves and moving themselves ahead, but living together and finding ways of dealing with each other equitably. The whole founding fathers were considered to be completely diabolical people in their way of shattering past monarchical systems and other forms of tyranny. But the Republicans, of course, since certainly at this point they've been infiltrated by Christian fundamentalists, definitely wouldn't have our liberal views about indulgence, you know, and human sexuality and such. So you can't just write us off as Tea Party folks.
Mm-hmm. But leaving aside the social elements of Christianity in United States society, when you say that in many ways America is a satanic society, what is it about the judiciary, maybe the law enforcement system, which isn't satanic? What would you change?
Well, I think at this point that there may be a little too much waffling on really holding people accountable for their acts. I think that, you know, too often folks get away with things. A lot of criminals do. But then, of course, in a jury system, you have to be very careful because people are fallible in their ways of viewing things. Personally, I've been a juror many times here in the United States, and I find that so many folks who are on the jury are not observant, and cases can be such that there can be a miscarriage of justice. I actually would feel that it might be wiser to have a panel of professional jurors, people who can be counted on to be impartial, to really pay attention to the facts and evaluate them with reason. That would be a major change that I would advocate in our society.
What about social welfare? Where does that fit in the satanic scheme of things?
It should never be forced. People shouldn't have money or any kind of funds or time appropriated from them to sacrifice that to other people who are not living up to things. It should be completely a matter of choice. So corporations should be free to give to whatever causes they like, and individuals. Many Satanists give to charities that they feel are doing worthwhile things, but we don't feel that any of that must, you know, should be compulsion.
That's interesting. So you don't see welfare as being a government-instituted welfare as being a something that sort of mitigates the effects of human greed.
Well, what welfare can do is rescue people who have contributed well to society. I think the problem with welfare is that it doesn't have conditions for what it's giving out. That's another change I would advocate, that there are strings attached, that if people never work and they simply live on a welfare system, that actually shouldn't be allowable. People should have to do some kind of working. They should have to contribute to society in some way in order to benefit from that society.
If you want to pursue sensual pleasure and self-empowerment, there are plenty of other avenues available. And if you want the esoteric element, there's always paganism. Why Satan? Why are you a Satanist rather than a pagan?
Well, first of all, I would say I wouldn't limit it to sensual pleasure. We're also interested in intellectual pleasure, all pleasure, any kind of pleasure. That's all part of Satanism. You're far too limiting. Now, also, I'd really like you to name five other avenues off the top of your head really quickly, if you could, because I can't think of any out of mainstream approaches that exist.
Avenues for the pursuit of pleasure that would be equivalent to Satanism.
Yeah. Name five.
Well, it goes back a little bit to what we were talking about before, that there are plenty of avenues for pursuing an Epicurean lifestyle.
And well, the thing is the opportunities exist, but there are not concrete philosophies that promote that. I think that that's the kind of misperception that you're having about that, that one could, of course, be free to do all of that, but there aren't concrete philosophies existing that point out, here's a wonderful avenue for you to do that. Because if there were, you would have been able to name five off the top of your head with no
sure.
problem. So I got you on that one. You really have to be a little more clear about that. Now, pagans are essentially theists. Most of them, anyway, that they believe in many gods rather than one god in multiple aspects, as the monotheistic faiths do. There are some pagans, of course, who just believe that they're dealing with archetypal images and not existing gods. And the non-theistic pagans, I would say, certainly could have some congruence with Satanism, because in Satanism, if you've looked through the Satanic Bible, you'll find that Anton LaVey lists what he calls the infernal names, and there are a roster of names of deities that were considered adversarial or of darkness all throughout human history. But Anton LaVey didn't limit himself just to history. He also said that since all deities are fictional, you can use deities from fiction, or you can make up your own. So whereas pagans are basically trying to deal with particular archetypes from various cultural pasts, Satanism is very broad in the respect that we find that anything that we find exciting, whether it be from fiction or from history, is something that we can use in our ritual practice.
When you mention rituals, rituals, of course, are very important in Satanism, and their rituals, if you go to the Satanic Bible, you'll find rituals where Satan is named by many names.
Sure.
Satan is invoked. given that Satanism is not theistic, who are you naming in these rituals and what exactly are you invoking?
Well, we basically see ourselves as Satan. We are the adversaries. Satan, as I think I said earlier, is really a manifestation of the best of ourselves. It's an externalized projection of the concrete realization of all of our possibilities. So it is a symbol, and it's only a symbol, but it's a powerful one for us.
One of the criticisms that atheists will often level at Christianity is that it leaves no room for doubt, right? That the Christian believes that he's fathomed the nature of the world and the universe and that he's got it right. Everybody else is wrong. And obviously, I'm caricaturing a little there, but it makes me wonder about how much room for doubt there might be in satanic philosophy. It's a skeptical philosophy, but how much of that skepticism is inwardly directed?
Well, our skepticism is based on whatever evidence is out there. We try to analyze everything and come to an understanding of the human animal and its place in the cosmos. Now, we're working from the evidence. If new evidence arrives, if God showed up and said, "Here I am, you must obey me," well, we'd have to change our point of view. Well, we'd probably think he was a monster because he created a universe that has monstrous things going on. And if he was the author of it, we'd probably still be against him. But we're certainly willing to examine any actual evidence for things so that we can, again, pragmatically adapt to what is really part of existence.
But I wonder how much of that goes on. I mean, there is, of course, a lot of Nietzscheanism in satanic philosophy. But one thing that Nietzsche was very big on was that you should always ruthlessly interrogate your own presuppositions and, you know, constantly strip everything away, make sure you're not falling into overly comfortable thinking. And from what I can gather, from what I'm reading and hearing, there seems to be an element within Satanism of complacency, if you like. You know, this idea that Anton LaVey hit the nail on the head back in the 1960s with his diagnosis of how the world works, and we don't really need to question that. Is that a concern for you, that could lead to a kind of complacency?
Well, I don't think so, because, again, the idea of employing doubt is something that we do employ regularly. Part of my writings have been used to expand philosophy of Satanism to areas that Anton LaVey hasn't covered. So we're always trying to see, again, how to apply the basic concepts. And if they don't work, we'll discard them or amend them. That's an ongoing process. We haven't even been around for 99 years yet, let alone 2000. So I think in time you'll see that you know, we'll keep our minds open and our eyes wide and see what we can learn about existence. And Satanism in 1,000, 2,000 years, I have a feeling, might not be that different from what it is today, because I don't think that there'll be many surprises about existence, the way people behave. Because humans have really, when we look through history of more than 2,000 years, don't seem to have changed very much. You look back to ancient Greece, plays from then, and you look back to things, records from Egypt and Sumeria even, and humans really haven't changed very much. And I doubt that they'll change that much in the next few thousand years.
When you say you've expanded on elements of LaVeyan philosophy, are there elements that you have revised or perhaps rejected?
No. There really haven't been any need to yet.
What about aesthetics? How important are aesthetics for you? Dress and style and imagery, decoration, this kind of thing?
Well, aesthetics tend to be rather paramount for most Satanists, that we enjoy our own personal aesthetics, our modes of dress, our environments where we live, to the best of our ability, considering our finances and our achievements. But we're also free to have our own tastes in Satanism. Again, since we're an individual's philosophy, people choose what pleases them. But if you've seen some of our people, we have some spiffy dressers, both male and female. But you can be however you please yourself. It's up to you. Now, I myself have a Victorian house. It was built in 1877. It's a nice place that kind of looks like an Adams Family place with a tower on it. And I've been restoring it for the past 3 years, and I'm doing kind of a fantasy restoration. The exterior is basically a black body color with two reds, two purples, and copper as an accent color. And the interiors are all kind of wonderful jewel tones with metal paint, and I restored all the crown moldings and ceiling medallions. So it almost in some aspects has what they now would call a steampunk kind of look, which for me originally comes from inspiration from 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, which might actually be the source for most steampunk thinking. But yes, aesthetics are something that most Satanists would embrace, and try to pursue to whatever extent they can in their lives.
Why is that, though? Where does that importance lie? Is it just as a means of, well, I say just, is it a means of self-expression, or is it something deeper than that?
Well, it is a means of self-expression, but when you look at human history, it's been, again, a pursuit of our species through all history. Art has been there, architecture, music. It's something that seems to be naturally part of our species. So how could one ignore that?
Mm. What kinds of art, for you, best embody the satanic virtues?
Well, again, in Satanism, we don't try to label any particular art that way because we leave the taste open to the individual Satanist.
Hmm. If you want me to expound on your personal taste, then, yeah.
Well, personally, see, I'm a musician by training. I have a master's degree in music composition, and I'm very interested in symphonic music. That's my favorite art form, in fact. And for me, the highest exponents of symphonic writing are people like Mozart and Beethoven, Mahler, Shostakovich, and Bruckner. Those are my gods, the people who create artwork that I find to be the most fulfilling. And to me, what is satanic is what satisfies me. And Satanists will feel that way. It's not like you go to a Christian church and you have to pick out something that is specifically, championing Jesus or something like that. And most Christians wouldn't go that way. I mean, at one point in time in history, they were more in that direction. We live in a society, I think, that has moved in that direction in a wonderful way, with people being so interested in having their own music collections and artists readily available. You can look at things. You can get prints online. You can download image collections from museums. There are galleries everywhere. It's wonderful. The architecture is flourishing. There's interesting things being done in that. We can be excited by that, and historic buildings are being preserved. The best of what humans produce, to me, is what is satanic.
There's a guest on this program, a Church of Satan member based in Sydney here, and he's a devotee of 1950s Rat Pack music. He's really into mm-hmm. Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin, who he sees as a fine embodiment of satanic philosophy. And, I mean, that's interesting.
My wife would agree with that.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah, my wife loves that music and those people. And, of course, you have to realize that Sammy Davis Jr., part of the Rat Pack, was a member of the Church of Satan.
Indeed. Yeah, yeah. If you compare that, though, with the more predictable or popularly recognizable satanic arts, or the arts that pick up those kinds of symbolism, I'm talking about goth culture and heavy metal, this kind of thing, is that interesting to you at all, or is that just commodification and all a little bit empty?
Well, I think when you bring up goth culture, I don't think that embraces anything satanic specifically. There's a lot of people dressing in black, and if you think that's just satanic, then that's about as much as you can pull together with that. The goth folks wear a lot of crosses and seem to have been influenced mostly by Anne Rice and her sort of vampire universe. There is no real philosophy involved in that culture. There are different people moving in who see it as like a role play thing, or might find it as a personal aesthetic. And there are some Satanists who do dress in ways that people might look at and say, well, that looks very goth, because they might be dressing from a different time period because it suits them, which the goths are to a certain extent. But I think the goths are more specifically rising out of particular literature rather than a study of history. For metal music, there have been people who do metal music who are members of the Church of Satan. Famous people like King Diamond, of course, mm-hmm. Who's been quite open about being a member. And there are certainly a number of current members who are in bands out there. For me, that music doesn't speak to me. It's not something that interests me personally. I wouldn't listen to it. I don't even really like the sounds that kind of. I don't like guitars and that kind of sound. I like a symphony orchestra or a pipe organ, or a chamber ensemble. That's my taste in music. But certainly there are plenty of Satanists who like that. So there are authentic Satanists doing heavy metal music, but there are also plenty of people in heavy metal who just use the devil as a symbol that they play with. Mm. They use it because it's a powerful symbol, and they want to be seen as being rebellious or trying to find youth culture that finds themselves being stultified by what would seem to be a Christian culture, and that attracts them to their music and sells albums. So for them, it's showbiz more than philosophy, I would say. But they may also feel that they genuinely want to have some kind of counter-Christian thought. But if they're turning it towards a sort of devil-worshipping thing, we really feel that that isn't counter-Christianity. Because if you believe in their devil, then you have to believe in their God. And in that mythology, the devil lost. So for us, that really doesn't hold much water.
A lot of people look at that popular manipulation of satanic symbols, though, as something a little bit cartoonish and tongue-in-cheek. And it's interesting to compare something like Rosemary's Baby, you know, back in the 1960s, early 70s. I can't remember exactly when that film came out.
But yeah, in the 60s.
Yeah. At the time, I mean, that was a big mainstream success, but it also frightened people a bit. It was a time when a lot of that stuff was being taken a lot more seriously. I think today, as I say, people look at these symbols used by heavy metal culture and other kinds, and they just see it as something a little bit funny and maybe even cute. And I wonder if you feel that this dilution of the cultural mystique or the shock value of Satanism today is something to be regretted.
Well, I actually don't feel that it's an across-the-board dilution of it. Again, since I mentioned that there is a rise in fundamentalism and the fundamentalist Christians totally believe that Satan is out there. You know, listen to Pat Roberts. The devil is leading people, you know, down a pathway. So they don't think it's funny at all. And that there's been a whole heavy metal culture which is mocked, I think, is really due more to the failings of the heavy metal culture than Satanism or the symbol of Satan. Additionally, movies like Rosemary's Baby, you also have to bring in The Exorcist. End up the Exorcist particularly is like a commercial for the Catholic Church because it's saying that there are demons out there. They're going to possess you and you need somebody to come along who's an ordained exorcist to you know, save your soul. So, you know, that too is something that's coming back, that there are more exorcisms going on. And the Catholic Church takes that seriously. There was a point where they were kind of trying to sweep that under the carpet, but lately, because especially a lot more third world countries are becoming Catholicized, there is a greater belief in exorcism out there. So it's not being considered a joke. But one thing that I think is fun is that real Satanism on a certain level can be used by actual humorists, most of whom are secularists, to make jokes about things and deal with religion. David Cross, who's a noted atheist comedian, did a show called Mr. Show, and in that he did a whole funny thing where he took a cartoon and he redubbed the lyrics, the soundtrack on it. It was kind of Satan was on one shoulder and an angel was on the other, and it was actually a very Satanist message of the Christian angel saying how, you know, you should keep away from Satan, and the Satan saying, no, we don't believe in God, and we're not promoting this kind of devil worship and animal sacrifice. And so, again, the reality of Satanism was used to make something funny. And for us, that means that since the founding of the Church of Satan in 1966, we actually are part of the fabric of the culture. We're not something that's just so off in the distance that people don't know what it is. And I think that's kind of an achievement that, again, the first 99 years are always the hardest. And we're getting recognized by, you know, comedians, but also by scholars, too. That's another aspect of it. I'm approached now more than ever before by academics and scholars who want to know about Satanism, who are writing papers, on the doctoral level and writing books about the subject. And they really want to understand the philosophy and its growth worldwide. So we are taken seriously as a religious alternative by actual religious scholars, far more so than in the 60s.
Is there any kind of tension for you there, though, between acceptance and rejection of the mainstream? Because, again, a guest I have on this program has talked about how, you know, he sees Satanism as being to the left of everything, to the point where it's important for him that, I don't think I'm misrepresenting what he's saying here, it's important for him that there is a certain shock value, a certain apprehension. He likes the way in which fear can be made to work. And I wonder if that is somehow diluted as the mainstream becomes more and more interested in and accepting of Satanism. Is it important for you to resist that a little bit?
Well, it's important to be feared by the proper people. For us now, secularists are starting to understand Satanism as a subset of atheism, and they're not afraid of what we are talking about. They don't see our theatrical approach to atheism as something that they have to expunge or distance themselves from. Of course, certain atheists still feel that way, but often they're the ones who are trying to be hugged and share the same kind of good guy badge that Christians have. They want to be ecumenical, and frankly, they're often barking up the wrong tree because the Christians see them essentially as going to hell, and they're never going to embrace them. Being feared by the right people is always what's essential. And I think that we're understood by intelligent secular people and that they're not afraid of us is an important development that is very strong for us. And that the fundamentalist fanatics will always be terrified of us, whether they really understand what we're about or not. The reality of us, as well as their myths about us, are terrifying to them. And that's wonderful. It should be that way.
Let's talk a little about show business. It's very interesting to me that Anton LaVey had a background in carnival, and he really took that element of razzle dazzle into the Church of Satan, and it works in interesting sorts of ways. Is that element still important for you, and how does it work for you?
Well, yes, absolutely. We say that all religion is show business of one form or another, and we're about the only one that admits to that. The 666 event that we did out in California at an atheist center, I might add, the Center for Free Inquiry, was meant to mock the superstitious belief that that date had some kind of frightening meaning to it. And that's why the atheists embraced us. They said, oh, this is great. You're doing something very theatrical that would really dramatize this idea. I don't think anybody else in the secular world did anything quite of the kind of power of that. And it was successful in that it was basically worldwide press recognized. I did interviews practically 24 hours a day leading up to it, and it was broadcast on just about every network and audio and video all over the world, the things that we were saying about that. So we reached a new height in our public relations for that.
There was a lot of discussion at the time about the extent to which that event was, you know, just a birthday party celebrating the 40th anniversary of the Church of Satan, or whether it was also an attempt to kickstart some interest in what you were about in a culture that is becoming increasingly secular and used to this kind of thing. Was there any element of that there as well?
I would say not really. It was a birthday party for the organization. And really, when you have a new religion that you've reached a 40th anniversary, that's actually kind of a wonderful landmark. If you understand about how religions form and grow, so many of them die. Very few survive the death of their founder. And that we were not only surviving it, but we were much broader based and widely recognized than when Anton LaVey was alive was certainly something to be celebrated. But one thing that's important about the Church of Satan is that we do not proselytize. We're not looking to bring people into Satanism. In fact, we turn away a lot of people who approach us because we don't think that they are by nature Satanists. The important thing for us is that Satanism is literature that explains a certain human type. And as I do describe it, it's a meta-tribe of people that from birth have a certain kind of outlook and perspective. And what happens when they read our literature is that they see themselves in it as if they were reflected in a mirror. And if they see it as a really sharp mirror reflection of themselves, they're likely Satanists and are often happy to have found a proper definition for themselves.
How do you measure the success of a Satanist? If we look at the hierarchical nature of the Church of Satan, there are various levels. You can be a registered member, and then a Satanist, and then you can be a warlock or a witch, and it goes up the scale. What are the criteria for elevation there? Do people sort of submit their CV to you and say, well, I've done this, this, and this, and I deserve a promotion? How does it work?
Well, first of all, the way the success of a Satanist is measured is the Satanist measures their own success by their own standards. That's really the primary way we have to deal with things. Now, the hierarchy in the organization is basically meant for us to offer recognition to people that we think have done things that are wonderful. Of course, they do submit not only proof of what they've done, but we like to meet folks when we can to see what kind of people they are. When people join the Church of Satan, they become a registered member, and that means that they've paid the membership fee of $200, which is a lifetime fee. We don't tithe people as most religious organizations do. And it simply means that they're supporting the philosophy of this organization. And the purpose of the organization is to make sure the philosophy is transmitted clearly. Now, to get to be a Satanist, a first-degree member, means that we evaluate an active application that covers – it lets people make a self-portrait of themselves for us. And so that we can really see if they're being honest that they really are Satanists by our definition. And if they are, they get to be recognized as a first degree. Now, when it moves up to witch and warlock, the varying degrees, you know, show how people apply Satanism to their lives to make their lives better for themselves. And also we judge them as to their achievements that they put out there that are peer evaluated by whatever field it's in. Are they successful there? And the more successful people are, not only in achieving their own personal goals, but in creating something that might be considered well received amongst their peers, that can move them up the hierarchical ladder. But it's not something that people should be competing for or trying for. These are just gifts from from me and my wife and the Council of Nine, just of recognition of saying, you know, we think you've done something well. Thank you very much. But it's not something that people need to seek. It's not required. We're not an initiatory religion where people need to go through different sort of ranks to go somewhere. It doesn't mean that we value people necessarily who have higher degrees more than people with lower degrees. Again, it's just flexible. They're sort of tokens of our appreciation mostly. And you have to please yourself as a Satanist. That's really the bottom line.
If we look at a figure like Satan in Milton's Paradise Lost, a lot of the energy and the dynamism there is from the fact that he's a tragic figure. You know, he makes a mistake. He misinterprets, misunderstands the nature of the power of God, and for this he pays. In spite of the glamorous figure that he cuts, ultimately this all comes at a cost. And I want to ask you about the cost. Does the life of a Satanist, has that involved any cost for you? Do you have any regrets at all?
No, I have no regrets whatsoever. I've been open about being a Satanist since I was in high school, because that's when I started talking about it to people. I became a Satanist when I was fairly young. When I was 13, I found the Satanic Bible and read it and said, oh, I'm not an atheist. I'm actually a Satanist. It's a much more precise description of who I am. So I was valedictorian of my high school class, being an open Satanist. It didn't stop me there. And I had good success in college, had a wonderful time. Again, being very open, I've had no problems being employed. I spent 18 years in the art world, the professional art world in New York City. And that everyone knew I was a Satanist. It was never a problem. It was always that I was an interesting alternative. And I think for many Satanists, since we tend to be exciting people for a lot of folks, that our perspective is something that they find interesting, and that we tend to be interested in lots of things in the world, lots of different pursuits, and we try to become expert in various things. So most Satanists have something to talk about, and they can do something. So we can be fun people to be around. So no, there's absolutely no regrets in having been an open Satanist from a very young age.
Are you happy?
I'm very happy.
Meaning what? What does happiness mean for you?
I'm satisfied. I have a life partner, my wife. We've been married for a long time, and we decided not to have children. We both were quite the same in that attitude. We didn't want them. And we pursued our lives, and they've been very satisfying. We've achieved the goals that we've been seeking. We've got lots of people involved in our life that we cherish, who enrich us. We've traveled to places that we find of interest. We have a wonderful place to live. Life for us is a great party. It's something we would never want to leave.
Can I ask about that decision not to have children? What was behind that?
Well, for us, I think the responsible thing when you're having children is that you have to have them at the center of your life for probably about 18 years, and it can really hamper your own personal pursuits. And I'm really not somebody who's interested in raising children. It's not something that was part of my goals or desires, and my wife is the same. We have plenty of friends who have children, and many of our friends are Satanists who have children, and they tend to be really wonderfully loving parents. And the interesting thing about Satanists is that they don't raise their children to be Satanists. What Satanists do with their kids is they give them a whole perspective of secular philosophy and religion, but it's always comparative religion. It's shown as something that's historical or contemporary, but they leave it up to their kids to make their own decisions as to what their own philosophies are going to be. It's not about indoctrinating them. There's no pressure put on them to be part of anything. We don't accept children as members of the Church of Satan. So The satanic parents are very open and encouraging of their kids to try whatever they might want to pursue to find happiness in their lives.
Speaking as someone who has close friends with very small children at the moment, when I look at their experience, I see a lot of self-sacrifice, self-abnegation, things that you might mistake for Christian virtues. And I wonder if there is a sense in which child-rearing is somehow at odds with satanic philosophy.
No, because again, satanic philosophy is about setting your own values. The most important thing to a Satanist is that the hierarchy of values are self-created. And if you value your child so that you sacrifice for your child, that's a choice. It's not Christian. It's simply a natural choice for creating your own value system. Christians make sacrifice compulsory, and Christians don't tell you, well, you pick the people you want to sacrifice for. No, they tell you, you have to love everybody, you have to sacrifice for everybody, and that's what we think is the unnaturalness of that perspective. We don't think that having altruistic impulses is something that's unnatural for the human animal. It's being forced to have them for whoever or whatever that somebody else is determining that is unnatural.
How have your thoughts on death matured and developed over the years?
Actually, they've never changed. From my very youth, I believed that death was the end, meant there was nothing existing past it. And I still think that. I think life is the great indulgence and death is the great abstinence, as Anton LaVey said. And it's a wonderful party that I don't want to leave. But I think that for a Satanist, what's important is that we often want to feel that we've left an impression on people with the things that we've done in our lives. And our satanic funerals emphasize that. The whole point in a satanic funeral is that people gather to remember how the person who has passed has impacted them, and they share those memories. And really, for the Satanist, that we treasure that we've interacted with people and left an impression on them.
There seems to be a great emphasis in Satanism on creativity and dynamism, and these are things which, of course, begin to ebb as we enter old age. And I guess I want to finish just by asking about the extent to which satanic philosophy can help in understanding and dealing with growing old, with senescence and with the ebbing of power.
Well, I think what Satanists... I've dealt with Satanists who have parents that are passing. My wife and my parents have passed. We've had to deal with that whole situation. And part of that is embracing people for what they've done, what we've experienced, appreciating them for the unique individuals that they've been. And we don't castigate somebody for not producing masterworks up until the very last moment of their lives. The great composers like Aaron Copland and Sibelius picked times in their lives where they said, okay, enough is enough. I've created all these wonderful things and I just want to relax now. I don't really feel I have it in me. And that's something that we can completely respect. Now, while Satanism also promotes the idea of this excellence in people, it's also up to a Satanist to decide whether they actually want to pursue something like that. A Satanist could personally decide they want to be a couch potato, and that's their own choice. And another Satanist might look at that and go, well, I don't really think that's such a great thing. But the Satanist who's choosing to be the couch potato says, I don't care. It's my choice, not yours. So again, in Satanism, there's options there, and you can choose your path and whatever satisfies you in that respect. So for me, though, I keep finding, I'm in my 50s now, and I'm busier than I've ever been before. I'm working on more projects. I'm writing more. I'm working on music. I'm actually beginning to take a painting that I stopped years ago. I have almost a renaissance at this point in my 50s of having so many opportunities and so many things to work on, and that I hope I can maintain energy as long as possible to keep pursuing them. And when it ebbs, I'll appreciate the things that I've achieved. I'll admire the things that people are achieving around me. I hope I stick around to see wonderful things that are done. And for me, it's a festival of wonders to absorb and indulge in. I think that there'll be things being created that will always capture my interest, even if I'm not creating something at that point. New things that come, or just enjoying old things. I'll never stop listening to Mahler and Bruckner and Shostakovich. Over and over, their works intrigue me and totally satisfy me. Lately, I've been studying Philip Glass's symphonies. His 8th and 9th are just amazing pieces, and they're his music is maturing as he's reached. He's 76 now, and his work is really getting a depth that's just wonderful, much more profound than he's ever been before. And I hope that when I'm 75, I'm doing things as wondrous as that.
Well, it's probably a good point at which to stop because we're going to lose the line in a couple of minutes. So I'll just say, Magus, Peter Gilmore, it's been really interesting to talk to you, and thank you very much for coming on the program.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, David. It's been a great pleasure.